explosive charges. Some must already have been set. A noise in the doorway made Corrin spin. A stormtrooper stood there, staring down at him. Corrin's right hand groped for the blaster pistol, but he knew he'd never make it in time. Then he noticed the stormtrooper's hands were empty. And more importantly, the man's feet were 2 inches off the ground. Oral cast the body aside, and it crumbled to the floor. The Gand took a look at the stormtrooper on the ground, then nodded once.
Oral apologizes for having left you undefended. Oral was out walking when the presence of these interlopers became apparent.
How many? The Gand shook his head.
2 less. Oral saw 4 others at various points on the perimeter.
And our sentries?
Gone.
Not good. Stormtroopers travel in squads of 9. Let's figure 2 dozen with the crew of whatever brought them here. Corrin refastened the ammo belt and slung it across his body. Reholstering the blaster pistol, he noticed that Oral had similarly appropriated his trooper's weapons. Is your boy dead? The Gand nodded and rolled his trooper onto his stomach. The trooper's helmet had a blood-smeared hole in the back of it. The hole itself looked odd, and Corrin knew that was because of its shape. Not just the jagged outline from where the armor crumbled. Kind of a diamond shape. He looked up.
Did you hurt your hand?
Oral folded his 3 fingers into a fist with the wound's peculiar shape.
Oral is not impaired.
Well, I am. By the night and the fog. You'll be in the lead. We have to assume the others are rigging the flight center to blow.
No alarm?
Corrin hesitated. By rights, raising an alarm would be the smart thing to do. But there were no troops to fight against the stormtroopers. Waking everyone up would be inviting them to get slaughtered as they ran about unarmed. The pilots would head toward their ships, and the stormtroopers in the flight center would cut them down in seconds.
Have to go silent on this one. We want to approach the flight center from the blind side.
The Gand nodded and led Corrin out into the misty darkness. Clutching the blaster carbine to his chest, a legion of conflicting thoughts and emotions flooded through him. With each step, a new plan presented itself to him. There had to be better ways to handle the situation than slipping blindly through the night to go hunting stormtroopers. They had every advantage over him. Not only would their armor protect them, but the helmet enhanced their vision, and the built-in comlink meant they could coordinate any efforts to hunt him down and kill him. Thoughts shifted, and ambition sparked dreams of glory. He saw himself as a hero of the Alliance for foiling the stormtrooper raid, yet that dream died quickly. As Biggs Darklighter and Jack Porkins had shown, most heroes of the Alliance were made heroes posthumously, and posthumous was the most likely outcome of the expedition. This did not suit Corrin, but the sense of menace radiating out through the night made it hard to deny. At the same time, the knowledge that he was surely dead provided him with a sense of freedom. His goal shifted from staying alive to making sure his friends would stay alive. He wasn't fighting for himself. He was fighting for them. He was the shield that would prevent the Empire's evil from touching them. In this idea, he found a haven from the sense of doom grinding in on him. Oral stopped him with a hand pressed gently to his chest. The Gand held up 1 finger, then pointed straight ahead. He made a fist with his right hand, then signaled with his left in a looping motion. Corrin nodded and sighted the carbine along the line where Oral had pointed. The Gand slipped to the left and immediately disappeared in the fog. The Corellian waited, willing himself to be able to see through the fog to his target. He knew the chances of hitting anything were minimal, and he expected to aim at the source of any blaster fire he saw. Even so,
He allowed himself to believe he could feel the soldier in a hard carapace standing 20 or so meters in front of him.
A wet crunch drifted to him through the fog.
Corin moved forward, carefully pushing his way through the leafy plants and curtains of tendril moss at the fringe of the compound. About where he had expected his target to be, he found the Gand, crouched over a prostrate stormtrooper.
The helmet looked decidedly flattened on top, and now rode low enough to hide the man's throat. Oral unfastened the last of the catches on the breast and stomach armor, then pulled it from the dead man's body and handed it to Corin.
You shall have exoskeleton too.
The human pilot smiled. He removed his gun belt and slipped the armor on. It was much too big for him, but he tightened the flank straps as much as he could and got a vaguely reasonable fit. Adding the trooper's ammo belt to his own helped hold the armor in place, though the weight of two blasters, one on each hip, made him feel slow. Oral hefted the other carbine in his free hand, then headed off into the night.
Corin followed, and quickly enough, they came to the side of the flight center that faced away from the central compound. They made good use of the hole the Kaha tree had made in the wall to slip back into the building. Light shone in beneath the edge of the door into the hallway, and Corin took this as a good sign. He pointed to it. If the troopers were in this wing, they'd have killed the light, because leaving it on means they'll be silhouetted when they enter a darkened room. Gavin and Sheil are in the next room. Let's get to them.
The Gand nodded and opened the door a crack. He peered out, then waved Corin forward.
Corin shut the door behind him and followed Oral through the next door down the hallway.
The Gand crossed to where the Shistavanin lay, while Corin approached Gavin's bed.
Shifting the carbine to his right hand, he crouched down and laid his left hand over Gavin's mouth.
He felt the boy start.
Gavin, be quiet. It's me, Corin. Be still.
Sheil awoke with a low growl, but after taking a couple of healthy sniffs of the air, he stopped making any noise. He sat up, then slipped from the bed and crouched along with Corin and the Gand at Gavin's bedside.
Troopers! Blood!
Corin nodded.
We have Stormies here in the base. They're rigging it to explode. They're in the hangar now, I think. We have three down, and we're guessing there were 24 total.
Oral handed the Shistavan and Wolfman a carbine.
You know how to use this?
Sheil's whispered laugh sounded like a growl.
Death marks don't come with the rain.
Corin stripped off one of his gun belts and shoved it at Gavin. You can fire a blaster?
The youth nodded, his face pale in the light from beneath the door.
Don't know if I'll hit anything, though.
Point and shoot! And shoot and shoot! Corin looked over at the two aliens. Since you both can navigate in the dark, and since your coloration makes you hard to spot, I think you should head out and around to the hangar.
He passed Sheil two of the spare clips from his belt.
We'll work our way in through the center here and try to attract their attention. If you get a clue to where their ship is...
The hall light went out.
Uh-oh. Gavin shook the pistol from its holster, and the power selection lever clicked. Leave it on kill, kid.
Corin pointed to the window.
Go, you two! Flank them!
Wordlessly, Corin turned and scuttled over to the door.
Reaching up, he turned the knob and opened it a crack.
He couldn't see anything in the dark, but he did hear the squeak of hinges farther along the hallway. He touched the medallion he wore once for luck, then pulled open the door, stepped into the hallway, and fired a burst. Two bolts caught one stormtrooper in the chest and tossed him backward into another trooper. The dead man's finger jerked his carbine's trigger, sending a line of bolts down the hallway. Corrin dove to the right, slamming his shoulder into the wall, avoiding them. Red light flashed back out of the doorway near the head of the hall, reminding Corrin of the flare in the eye plate of the first trooper he had killed. In an instant, the Corellian knew the room contained a third stormtrooper, and that at least one of the squadron's pilots lay dead in bed. Corrin's second burst knocked down the stormtrooper emerging from beneath the imp corpse. Corrin thought he went down hard enough to be dead, but the little votive fires lit in the floors and walls by the stray blaster bolts didn't supply enough light for him to be certain. Then, the trooper in the room at the head of the hallway emerged and, as if the trooper's mirror image, Gavin came through the doorway of his room. Gavin, no! The farm boy triggered one shot while the trooper filled the hallway with a steady stream of fire. Corrin hit his trigger and scythed the muzzle back and forth across the hallway. He heard Gavin grunt and fall behind him. His own shots cut the legs out from under the stormtrooper. The last bolt blasted through the square eye plate and bubbled the armor at the back of the man's head. The doors along the hallway swung open. Nearest to him, Corrin saw the Twi'lek. Gavin's down! Help him! Stormtroopers are here in the base! Nuwara Venn stared at him.
How did they find us?
I don't know! The place is rigged to blow! Get everyone clear! Corrin sprinted down the hallway, leaping over the trio of dead stormtroopers. He stripped the power pack from the carbine and slapped a new one into it. As he neared the hangar, he heard plenty of blaster fire. The semi-transparent plastic strips hung over the doorway showed a lot of shots heading out to converge on two points in the darkness, which told Corrin that Sheel and Oral had attracted plenty of attention with their flanking maneuver. Shooting coming from either side of the door, too. Corrin fished one of the explosive cylinders from a belt pouch and set the timer for 5 seconds. He punched his thumb down on the arming button. Glancing up, he located what he saw as the largest concentration of shots heading out at his comrades. 6. Looks good to me. Corrin stepped through the plastic curtain and let the arming button come up, starting the timer. He slid the explosive cylinder across the smooth ferrocrete surface toward the knot of commandos. 3, 2, 1! The explosion scattered the soldiers, casting two up and over the generator cart they'd been using as cover. Before they hit the ground, Corrin turned and thrust his blaster carbine at the stormtrooper hunkered down to the left of the door. The burst of laser fire burned through the torso armor, blasting the man out from behind a breastwork of crates. Spinning, Corrin sprayed scarlet blaster darts over the stormtrooper on the other side of the doorway. The shots hit him in the chest and legs, somersaulting him back through the plastic sheet and out of the hangar. Continuing his spin, Corrin snapped shots off at various muzzle flashes, backing and turning, picking up speed and allowing himself to drift almost at random. He knew he should be terribly frightened, but since he had decided he was as good as dead before, fear could find no purchase on his soul. He viewed his situation with an emotional detachment that surprised him. It allowed him to see his entry into the hangar, much as he had seen diving into the cloud of ties at Hansara. I can shoot at anyone. They have to take care. Corrin's gun came up, and the muzzle tracked strobing laser fire over the silhouette of a stormtrooper up on the hangar's catwalk. The trooper straightened up and twitched, then slowly began a backward spin toward the floor that Corrin found incredibly graceful. His landing, which was all broken and herky-jerky, ruined the beauty of his fall and brought Corrin back to the hideous reality in which he was enmeshed. A laser bolt caught him in the right breast and pitched him into the shadows. He landed hard against a wall of wooden crates, and stars exploded before his eyes when his head hit something solid. He heard wood and glass break and a gurgle of a vessel emptying. He hoped it wasn't his body emptying of blood, but the shooting pains in his chest and the fire radiating out from the wound all but guaranteed he was the source of the sound. A sickly sweet scent mixed with the stink of burned flesh, and Corrin knew he was dying. That smells like Corellian whiskey. His mind flashed back to the endless rounds of drinks at his father's wake. Each one punctuated a toast or a testament to his father by members of Corsac. From the director on down to Gil and Ayala, to the rookies his father had taken under his wing. At that time, Corrin had thought having such a wake would be the grandest send-off possible.
And now, I hallucinate the smell of it.
A jolt of pain left him a moment of lucidity in its wake, and Corrin clung to it.
His vision cleared, and he saw laser bolts burning in all directions through the darkness.
He tried to lift his own carbine, but he couldn't feel its weight in his hand.
He decided to draw the blaster pistol, which was when he discovered his right arm wasn't working so well. That realization came a second or two before the laser fire silhouetted a stormtrooper seeking cover nearby.
Corrin willed his body to sink into the ferrocrete, but nothing happened.
The stormtrooper swept something aside with a foot, and Corrin heard the clatter of the carbine against an unseen crate.
He tried to lever himself up with his left arm, but the pain in the right side of his chest stopped him. He found himself short of breath. My lung collapsed.
The stormtrooper lowered his carbine, giving Corrin a good view of the muzzle.
It's over for you, rebel scum.
You too, little Stormy.
Corrin raised his left hand, but kept his thumb pressed on the end of the explosive cylinder he'd eased from the pouch on his belt.
I die, and it blows.
The stormtrooper hesitated for a second, then shook his head.
Nice try. You're holding the wrong end.
Blaster wine filled the crate-lined cul-de-sac, and Corrin flinched involuntarily. He thought flinching was a bad way to die. Then he realized that the dead are seldom that vain. Above him, the stormtrooper's body wavered, then buckled at the knees and crashed down beside him. The hole in the back of his armor sparked and smoked. Wedge came running up and dropped to one knee beside Corrin.
How are you doing, Mr. Horn?
Parts of me don't hurt that much.
Wedge smiled.
Hang tight. The Stormies are withdrawing.
Medic! Bombs!
I know. We're finding and disarming them.
Corrin smiled and tried to take a deep breath.
Gavin?
Bad, like you. We're already getting set to evacuate.
I'm as good as dead.
He winced.
I'm so far gone. I smell Corellian whiskey.
You do smell Corellian whiskey, Corrin. You're lying in a puddle of it.
Wedge frowned.
The crate that broke your fall is full of Wyron's reserve.
What? How?
Wedge shook his head as MD droids toddled over.
I don't know. Consider solving that mystery your assignment while you recover from your wounds.
Wedge Antilles watched as Gavin Darklighter and Corrin Horn floated all but lifeless in Bacta tanks. Seeing them there brought back memories of the time he had spent in such a tank. It hadn't been aboard the Reprieve, but on Home One, Admiral Akbar's flagship at Endor. He'd been barely conscious during his time in the tank, which he saw as a blessing. Being awake and thinking while being able to do nothing would have driven him insane.
Your pilots have improved, Commander Antilles.
Wedge turned and blinked his eyes in surprise.
Admiral Akbar? What are you doing here, sir?
The Mon Calamari clasped his hands at the small of his back.
I read your report and found it disturbingly clinical. I decided I wanted more information.
Wedge nodded. There wasn't much time to prepare the report.
And you never really liked data padding?
No.
Wedge rubbed a hand over his face and discovered a fair amount of stubble on his chin and jaw. How long has it been since I slept?
You could have requested a supplemental report, or asked me to report to you aboard Home One and saved yourself the trip.
I thought of that, but I knew another report from you would be light in bites, and that you would refuse to leave your people. So I chose to save myself the annoyance.
Akbar stared through the viewport at the two men in the tank.
Besides, the tone of the Provisional Council meetings is beginning to wear on me. The fate of Rogue Squadron is important enough that I was able to slip away without being accused of running.
The Corellian looked over at his commander. Are things that acrimonious?
I probably exaggerate. Politicians tend to view soldiers like their pet Cyborian battle dogs.
And soldiers don't like to be considered pets.
Akbar's barabels twitched slightly.
Since we are the ones who get bitten and bleed and die, we tend to resist plans that are politically expedient but militarily suicidal.
He tapped his hand against the viewport.
Is the picture of what happened there any more clear?
Not yet. The basics are the same. Three pilots seriously wounded, one dead, and all six sentries dead. A number of others have cuts and scrapes. It should have been much worse, but it looks as if the stormtroopers wanted to plant the explosives, withdraw, then arm and detonate them by remote. Had they just put them on timers, we would have lost equipment and people before we found them all. A full platoon was operating on Talassia. We got all of them, and captured the Delta DX-9 transport they came in on.
Hardly worth the cost, but a good thing, nonetheless.
Wedge nodded. The ones we captured, two stormtroopers, and all five of the transport's crew, refused to talk. I have them in detention, isolated from each other. I've had an MDO and MD-1 droid engaged in post-mortems of the troopers we killed. With luck, something will give us an idea where they came from.
And Talassia was evacuated?
Yes, sir. We expect Imperials to come looking for whatever got their people. So we set up some booby traps and other surprises for whoever follows us in there. Wedge sighed heavily. I have a list of what we left behind, in case we ever have cause to go back. The Mon Calamari nodded slowly.
What is the mood of your unit?
Wedge turned and pressed his back against the cool transparasteel. He just wanted to close his eyes and go to sleep. And he feared he'd do just that if he did close his eyes.
We're all stunned and exhausted. Losing Lujain came as a shock. She wasn't the best pilot in the unit, and not one to take chances. So none of us had her pegged as someone who would die first. Corrin or Bror or Sheel were easy to picture going out in a blaze of glory. And Corrin almost did. Lujain was a fighter, so having her die in her sleep was... Well, it just made it worse. She was murdered, not killed in combat. And I guess I thought we were somehow immune to that sort of ignominious death.
He shook his head.
That makes no sense, of course.
Akbar patted him on the shoulder.
It does make sense. We know war is barbaric, but we try not to be barbaric in waging war. We hold ourselves to a high standard that demands we only attack legitimate military targets, not civilians, not medical frigates. We would like to see this honor we demand of ourselves reflected in the actions of our enemies.
But if they were as honorable as we are, we'd not be fighting this war.
And in that, Commander Antilles, you have the core of the whole problem.
The Mon Calamari paced away from the viewport.
When will your people be out of the tanks?
Wedge glanced down at his chronometer.
12 hours more for Horn and Darklighter. Another 24 to 48 for Andorni Hui. I've been told it has something to do with her metabolism, but she was hurt worse than they were, too. I want to hold a memorial for Lu Jane fairly soon. He rubbed his eyes. Gavin will be crushed. She's been helping him sharpen his astronavigation skills.
It seems then nothing can be done until at least 12 hours from now.
Wedge shook his head. Nope. We just have to wait.
No, you just have to sleep.
The Corellian turned and looked at Akbar.
I can rest later.
But you will rest now. Consider that an order, Commander. Or I will order a 2-1-B droid to sedate you.
Akbar's chin came up as he spoke, and Wedge knew he'd carry out his threat.
In 14 hours, I want to see you and your XO on Home One. General Somm will have arrived by then.
If I'd known I could look forward to a dressing down by him, I'd have let the stormtroopers shoot me.
Yes. He can have that effect, can't he?
Akbar's mouth hung open in a silent laugh at his joke.
The purpose of this meeting is not a reprimand, however.
No?
No!
Akbar's voice became calmer, yet more intense.
Someone in the Empire struck at one of my forward bases. If we don't strike back, and strike back hard, they might feel emboldened to continue such activity. I don't want this to happen. General Somm's bomber wing should be sufficient for exacting retribution.
If you want Rogue Squadron to fly cover for such a mission, you have us.
That was the reaction I expected from you, Commander. Now go get some sleep.
Yes, sir. Wedge saluted. Sleep it is. And dreams of retribution will be very pleasant indeed.
Corin wasn't certain what was worse. The sour taste of Bacta in the back of his throat, or feeling like he was still bobbing up and down in the tank. To him, Bacta tasted like lum that had gone flat, gotten stale, and been stored in a sort of plastic barrel that lent it an oiliness that slicked his tongue. Because the blaster bolt had punctured his right lung and collapsed it, a little Bacta had been circulated through the lung, bringing the fluid's cloying bouquet to his nose every time he exhaled. Other than that, he felt pretty good. He still had a reddish spot on his chest where he had been shot. The mark on him was about half the size of the mark on Gavin. Corin realized that armor had saved his life by absorbing some of the power of the bolt. How Gavin survived taking a shot to the naked abdomen, he hadn't a clue. Gavin rolled onto his side on the next bed over.
Never done that before. Blunder into a light fight? Or spend time in a Bacta tank? Neither.
The youth frowned.
I didn't think I was blundering.
You weren't.
Corin shook his head and swung his feet around so he could sit up.
I should have realized you didn't know to wait until I signaled the hall was clear. I didn't think, which is why you went down. It was my fault you got shot.
Gavin covered the reddish area on his stomach with his right hand.
It hurt a lot, and I guess I fainted. You're lucky that's all you did. That shot should have killed you. I know I shot back at the stormtrooper. Did I get him?
I don't know, Gavin. Unless you have a holo of a light fight, trying to reconstruct it after the fact is all but impossible.
Corin slid from the table and found his legs supported him with only a few minor tremors.
He and his buddies died, and that's all that counts.
Were any of us killed?
Corin remembered the impression of death he'd had in the corridor, but he shook his head.
I don't know, Gavin.
The med center hatch opened, and Wedge Antilles stepped through it. His smile broadened at first, then shrank slightly. He paused and returned the hasty salutes Gavin and Corin managed.
Good to see both of you hale and hearty.
Hardy, perhaps, sir. But Hale will need some work. Corrin worked his right arm up and around in a circle. A night's rest ought to make it all right.
And you, Gavin? How do you feel?
Fine, sir. I could fly right now if you need me.
That's not necessary right away.
Wedge's expression darkened. We've abandoned Talassia and evacuated it cleanly. We got the stormtroopers and captured their transport ship. Forensic analysis of the bodies has given us a good indication of where they came from. I'm meeting with Admiral Akbar and General Somm to consider a counterstrike against their base.
I'm in. Me too.
Gavin hopped off the bed. His knees buckled, but he caught the edge of the bed and remained upright.
I want to go and repay them.
Wedge nodded, and Corrin knew he was getting to the worst part of the report. In the raid, we gave better than we got, but we had casualties. 6 of our sentries died. You two and Andorni were severely wounded. Wedge glanced down at the deck, then over at Gavin. The Jane Forge was killed. Gavin leaned heavily on the bed.
Lujane is dead?
Corrin sat abruptly on the floor. He'd felt her die. He knew she had died. Yet he couldn't believe it any more than Gavin could. She'd always been the member of the squadron who was concerned with the welfare of the others. Not just their physical welfare, but how they felt. She formed the heart of our unit, bringing us together. There's no way she should have been the first of us to die. He stared down at his empty hands.
She never even collected on that favor I owed her for fixing my X-Wing. And now she's gone.
Gavin shook his head.
She can't be dead. She's been tutoring me in astronavigation. She... The youth balled his fists and hammered them against the edge of the table. Dead?
Wedge sighed. It's never easy to lose a friend, Gavin.
Gavin raised a fist as if he wanted to smash it down again,
but let it slowly drift back to his side.
This is the first time anyone I've known has died.
Corrin raised an eyebrow.
Really?
He's only a kid, Corrin.
I know, sir, but his cousin.
Gavin shook his head.
I've met people before who later died. I remember Mr. Owen and Aunt Beru. That's what I called them on the couple of times Biggs let me tag along when he visited Luke at the Lars farm. When they died, my father took the farm over.
Wedge frowned.
I thought Luke had given it to an alien.
Yes. Throg was his name. He worked for a couple of seasons, but my uncle wanted to add that farm to his holdings. So he got the Anchorhead Municipal Council to pass an alien landowner tax, which would have broken Throg to pay. My father didn't hold with his brother's tactics. So Dad bought the farm from Throg, paying him what it was worth instead of letting Uncle Huff buy it in a tax auction.
Gavin shrugged.
Growing up on that farm, I could remember having seen the Larses, but I never really knew them. I was a kid. A real kid. They were nice to me, but...
But you didn't know them.
Corrin drew his knees up to his chest.
I understand. Still, your cousin, Biggs. Biggs was 8 years older than I was. There were times he liked having me around and times he didn't. I couldn't understand why. Not then.
Gavin shrugged.
I've grown up since then, so I kind of understand now, but still, I didn't really know him. And not seeing him or Luke's aunt and uncle after, well, it's not like I know they're gone. I do, but, you know?
I do know.
Wedge folded his arms across his chest.
I was there when Biggs died. I got hit and pulled up out of the trench on Luke's orders. Your cousin and I both knew we were really there as an added set of shields to keep Luke safe. But we didn't regret that. We knew he'd have done the same thing for us. And we also knew he had to blow the Death Star. Big stayed there, keeping the ties back, and died there. And even though he died, he bought Luke the time he needed to destroy the Death Star.
The Rebel Commander's eyes nearly shut as he stared off into space.
I flew with Biggs before Yavin, and he was really good. It seemed like he could read the minds of TIE pilots. He knew when to brake, when to shoot, and did everything necessary to stay in their ion exhaust and blast them to bits. He was proud of his record and his skill, but not arrogant.
Gavin smiled.
He had that smirk. The one he'd give you when he'd done something you couldn't.
Wedge chuckled. I used to hate that smirk. But I didn't have it directed at me all that often.
In his first mission, we went against an Imperial convoy. Right after they'd started assigning Nebulon B frigates. Just like the Reprieve here, to jump cover for the convoys. It launched 2 dozen TIEs at our squadron. Biggs lit and vaped 5, making him an ace, but another pilot claimed his number 3 kill. That kill made the other pilot an ace. I think he was on his 15th mission at the time.
Biggs gave the guy the smirk and let him have it.
And thereafter, when Biggs got 5 of something, he'd give this guy the 3rd one. He wasn't nasty about it, but he didn't let the guy forget.
Gavin nodded.
Biggs was like that. He'd needle you with your own little foibles until you did something about it, or it didn't bother you anymore.
It was his way of making everyone toe the line and push themselves to be the best they could. That's why he used to get after Luke about going to the academy. He didn't want to see anyone waste themselves when they could be doing more.
Wedge scratched the back of his neck.
If he'd survived Yavin, we'd be reporting to him now.
Corrin raised a finger.
Did the 3rd kill guy ever redeem himself?
The curve of Wedge's smile flattened out.
The guy, Karsk was his name. Emil Karsk, took the 3rd of 5 scheduled patrols for Biggs. It was an easy job. Nurse mating a blockade runner on a courier mission. He'd even promised a couple of days of rest and recreation. It was a plum assignment, but Biggs let him have it, and was willing to call it even. That mission and that courier took Karsk to Alderaan. He was on the ground when the Death Star appeared.
Ouch.
Corrin reached up and hauled himself to his feet.
Biggs was lucky he let the mission slide.
Yeah, but luck runs out eventually.
Wedge's brown eyes hardened.
Ours hasn't. Not entirely yet. I'm glad you're both back with us. I prefer not having to add you to the list of friends I've lost to the Empire. The list is too long already.
Gavin swallowed hard once, then extended his hand to Wedge.
Thank you, sir. I feel like I know Biggs a bit better now.
Wedge shook the youth's hand.
Thanks for giving me the chance to remember the good things about Biggs. Too much of war is remembering the loss. The point at which people cease contributing to this life. Biggs, Porkins, Dak, Lujane. They all need to be remembered as more than just casualties. I don't do that often enough.
The commander glanced at the chronometer on the ship's bulkhead.
I'm due to meet with Admiral Ackbar shortly. You've got about 4 hours before we'll have a memorial for Lujane and the other people we lost on Talassia. And after that, Ackbar willing, and Psalm being sanguine, will bleed some Imperials pale of luck, and let our dead rest just that much easier.
20. M'Tray's uncharacteristic quiet on the flight over from the Reprieve to Home One had started Wedge wondering if the galaxy hadn't changed around him while he'd been sleeping. the droid hadn't wheedled, cajoled, begged, or bored him with details about the need for him to travel to Home One. He just showed up and said he had things to take care of on board the Rebel flagship. Tycho had shrugged, so Wedge agreed. The droid seemed uncharacteristically quiet, but that didn't seem sinister and really was quite welcome. As he piloted the Forbidden on the run over to the Mon Calamari Star Cruiser, he realized he'd not seen much of M'Tray during the time on Talassia, and he'd heard even less from him. He'd heard even fewer complaints about the droid, and this he took as a good sign. He felt caring for pilots was tough enough without having to worry about droids, too. A smile on General Salm's face as Wedge and Tycho entered Admiral Akbar's briefing room increased the Corellian sense of dislocation with the galaxy.
Good to see you, Commander Antilles, Captain Selchu. It was very kind of you to have your M-3PO droid send that gross of new flight suits to Defender Wing. We accept your apology and look forward to working with you on this mission.
Wedge looked at Tycho, but his XO gave his head a nearly imperceptible shake.
If it makes Salm happy, do I really need to know what's going on?
You're welcome, General. We're all on the same side, after all.
Akbar's face shifted from Wedge to Salm and back again. He blinked, then clasped his hands together.
Clear water, gentle waves. Good.
The Mon Calamari seated himself and pushed a button on the chair's arm.
Our droids have double-checked the findings of the forensic team working on the stormtroopers you brought up from Talassia. They confirmed the rash on three of them as being Rachuk roseola. DNA analysis of the virus shows a variation from the sequencing reported there 2 years ago. And given the spontaneous mutation rate, this would be the most recent strain.
Wedge nodded. So they came from Rachuk.
Akbar pointed to the computer-generated holographic image growing up in the middle of the group. It showed a relatively small world with a scattering of jungle islands.
The Rachuk system itself is unimportant, except that its central location means a great number of ships pass into and out of it as they conduct trade. The Empire located a base on Vladet to discourage piracy, and they were relatively successful in doing so. The Chorak system is within the sector controlled from Rachuk, as is the Hensara system. So it is logical to assume that the sector commander decided Rogue Squadron needed to be eliminated.
But how did they know where we were?
Salm's face darkened slightly.
The presence of a spy in your midst cannot be fully discounted.
Wedge glanced at Tycho, but saw no reaction to the remark at all.
A better man than I not to shoot back. No spy at all would leave the same evidence as a very good spy. One in so deep we couldn't find it.
That is still no reason why we shouldn't look for a spy.
Tycho shook his head.
Security at the base was tight. We had no unauthorized messages going in or out.
That you know of?
No, sir.
Or,
Salm smiled,
that you're choosing to report.
General, Captain Selchu is reporting the results of checks I performed myself. There were no leaks from Rogue Squadron. Akbar waved the discussion away with a flip of his hand.
It is more than likely that the Empire planted a number of passive sensor devices in the buildings there after Vader killed off the colony. If such sensors gathered data and then sent it out on a delayed basis, or in a format we could not easily recognize, we would miss it. While we did have teams sweep the area, detecting passive devices is not easy.
It also could have been blind luck.
Salm looked at Tycho.
What do you mean, Captain?
Tycho raked brown hair back from his forehead.
Imperials tend not to be subtle. If I'd been in command, and I knew where Rogue Squadron was, I would have brought in everything I had. We know Rachuk Command has an interdictor, and at least one strike cruiser that can carry 3 squadrons of TIEs. Since all of that didn't show up, I suspect they just sent out stormtrooper platoons to recon uninhabited systems in the sector. Assuming, of course, that they have spies in most of the inhabited systems. One platoon found us, and the commander decided to be ambitious and destroy us himself. Akbar nodded.
Another logical conclusion, drawn from the evidence at hand. There has also been a fair amount of traffic by small trading ships into and out of Talassia.
Yes, sir. M-Trey can give you the data on them.
He already did. And they all appear to be clean, Commander. But one misstatement by one crew member, and your security would be compromised. Ultimately, though, the reason the Talassia base was discovered is less important than our discovery of the source of the stormtroopers. It has been 2 standard days since the stormtroopers died, so chances are very good that their absence has been noticed.
Wedge folded his arms. Standard Imperial response would be to move in, secure the planet, and prevent us from using it again.
We expect the Havoc and the Black Asp to be used to prevent Rogue Squadron from making a quick hit and run on the Talassia Expeditionary Force. They won't be defending Rachuk.
Salm reached out and touched the holographic world. The island he selected grew up in place of the world of which it was part. As the image expanded, the computer added buildings, mountains, ion cannon batteries, and other details of military importance. 2 steep mountain chains, the edges of an extinct volcano's crater, enclosed the base like parentheses.
We have other information about the locations and patrol routes of the Rachuk sector ships. We believe Ladette should be open to a reprisal strike, and Grand Isle here is the place to hit.
Wedge took a step closer to the holographic island floating in midair. Defense shields?
Salm smiled, and Wedge was pleased that predatory leer wasn't directed at him.
Not if they want to fire their ion cannons. The island, as you can see, is part of an old volcano. The generators are geothermal and old, and not up to the strain of raising the shield and powering the ion cannons.
And if they choose to go turtle instead of trying to shoot?
The bomber pilot traced a circle around what would have originally been the edge of the crater. To the south, the wall had broken down almost completely, and much of the base had been built on the flat stretch of land that linked the volcano and the bay. On the north side of the crater, the wall had begun to erode, but it was just a small divot compared to the gap to the south.
The shield generator has to cover everything from the beach to the top of the mountains. On the north side, it should be possible to blast through the mountain and open up enough of a gap to let our bombers in. Once we're under the shield, the generators go, and it's over.
It looks like it should work.
Wedge rubbed a hand over his chin.
Are we hitting and running, or moving in?
We want to cripple Vladette, so the Empire will have to move new forces in.
Akbar hit another button on the arm of his chair, and the island vanished.
The Rachuk sector is immaterial at the moment, except as a symbol, and a wound the Empire must stanch. We want this raid to go off in 12 hours. What will Rogue Squadron's operational strength be then, Commander?
I'll be down 2 pilots. I could give Captain Selchu Forge's X-Wing.
No!
General Salm shook his head adamantly. Akbar opened his mouth in a smile.
What General Salm meant by this is that we will be using the Iridane as a command and control center. Captain Selchu will operate there to coordinate Rogue Squadron and Defender Wing. This is at Captain Afyon's request.
Wedge frowned at General Salm. How is it that you will trust Tycho to direct all our forces, but won't trust him in the cockpit of an X-Wing? Isn't it obvious where he can do the most damage? Is that acceptable to you, Captain?
He put enough of an edge in his voice that he felt certain Tycho knew he'd fight Salm if Tycho wanted to fly in the raid.
Yes, sir. I've not logged enough time in an X-Wing to be mission qualified anyway, Commander. So I'll be happy to do flight coordination and control.
Salm tugged at the hem of his blue coat.
I'll have my own flight controller on the Iridane. You'll work with him.
Of course, sir.
And your man will decide whether or not to relay orders.
Wedge nodded to himself.
We'll make it work.
Good.
Akbar closed his eyes for a moment, and Wedge took that as a sign of appreciation for his cooperation.
You are returning to the Reprieve for the memorial service?
Yes, sir.
If you don't mind, General Salm and I will fly over with you in the Forbidden to attend ourselves.
Wedge smiled, more at the Admiral's offer than Salm's clear look of surprise.
We would be honored, sir.
And we will honor your debt.
Akbar turned to the bomber pilot.
And you will want your Defender Wing pilots there too. Yes, General?
Salm hesitated, then nodded.
Perhaps if we mourn together before we fly together, our units won't have so much to mourn after we hit Fladette.
Kirtan Lore ducked involuntarily as he felt the tremor rip through the soil. A muffled report reached his ears a second later. The comlink clipped to his lapel hissed with static, then calmly reported,
418 and 420 are down.
The intelligence agent shivered, and it wasn't the cool Talassian night that shook him. The stormtrooper making the report had reacted as if the rebel's little booby trap had killed droids, not people.
Of course, stormtroopers are hardly people, are they?
Brought up to be fanatically loyal to the Emperor, most of them seemed slightly distracted by his death. While this did not dull their efficiency, it did seem to make them care less about their own lives. On Talassia, care for one's continued well-being seemed to be a required skill. The rebels had rigged up a lot of explosive surprises for whoever followed them to Talassia. Just who that would be was not difficult for them to figure out. Lore straightened up.
Not that it matters how many stormtroopers die. There must be a factory that stamps them out.
He started to smile at his own whispered comment, but a cold dagger of fear plunged into his guts. Two stormtroopers in white armor emerged from the fog like wraiths risen from the grave. They stopped directly in front of him, but neither one bothered to crane his neck back to look up at Lore's face.
Agent Lore?
Kirtan nodded and did his best to wear a mask reminiscent of pictures he'd seen of Tarkin.
Yes?
Priority message relayed from Vladette. You are ordered to return to Vladette immediately and await further orders.
What does that idiot Devlia think he's playing at?
Kirtan had been furious when he learned Devlia had sent a single stormtrooper platoon to check Talassia. He had recommended using a probe droid and then following it with a full-scale attack. Devlia had ignored his recommendation and had sent stormtroopers because they were, in his words, a renewable resource. The same could not be said for probe droids.
Nor could it be said of stormtrooper transports.
Kirtan stared down at the stormtrooper.
Send a message back to Admiral Devlia and tell him I will return to Vladette when I am finished with my survey of this base.
Sir, the message came from Imperial Center, not Admiral Devlia.
He purposely, slowly raised his head and stared off above the white domes of their helmets. He knew his efforts to hide his shock and fear were useless.
I suspect stormtroopers smell fear the way animals do.
A ship has been sent for me.
You're to take one of the shuttles, the Helicon, directly to Vladette. It is waiting for you in the landing zone.
Thank you for relaying the message.
His voice carried no conviction with it.
carry on.
The two stormtroopers marched off through the swirling mist, leaving Kirtan to be assaulted by cold air outside and cold dread inside.
Iceheart must have already gotten my message about this fiasco. If she's looking to place blame for this disaster, it won't be on my head.
He forced himself to smile and bolstered his effort by visualizing a trembling Admiral Devlia.
Tremble you shall, little man. In ignoring me, you have angered my mistress. And I suspect her anger can be decidedly lethal.
The seven caskets lay atop a repulsor lift platform, each one draped with white cloth to which had been affixed a blue emblem. For six, that emblem was the Rebel crest. Lujane Forge's shroud bore the Rogue Squadron crest, with one of the dozen X-Wing fighters cut away. The caskets had been laid out in the center of the starboard fighter bay, aboard the Reprieve, with Lujane's in the middle. Directly behind them stood all the members of Rogue Squadron, save one. And Dorney Hui had been allowed out of the Bacta tank for the duration of the ceremony, but she was still too weak to stand unaided. She lay back in a hover chair, her dark eyes half-lidded and her limbs nearly lifeless. She looked to Wedge the way he felt inside, all crushed down by the squadron's loss. Behind the pilot stood the techs and crew who had been evacuated from Talassia. Flanking them were the men and women of Salm's Defender Wing, as well as some of the crew and medical personnel on the Reprieve. The gathering reminded Wedge of the assembly held on Yavin 4 to honor Luke, Han, and Chewbacca for their destruction of the Death Star. I only wish this occasion were as happy a one as that had been. Wedge stepped out from between Admiral Akbar and General Salm, looked down at the caskets, then back up again. Over 7 years ago, many of our brethren were gathered together in the aftermath of a great battle to commemorate the heroism of our friends. None of us thought at that time of how desperate our situation was or how long our battle against the Empire would continue. The future was, for us, the next minute or hour or day or week. Life expectancy, especially among pilots, was measured in missions, and seldom multiple digits involved in the calculations. At that gathering on Yavin 4, we were able to celebrate our victory as if, with the destruction of that one terrible weapon, the first Death Star, we had brought the Empire crashing down. We knew it wasn't true. We knew we would abandon Yavin shortly thereafter, but for that time, we were able to forget how desperate and difficult our fight for freedom would be. We could forget how many more of our friends would die pursuing the common dream of freedom for all people, all species within the galaxy. Wedge swallowed hard against the lump thickening in his throat. That dream still lives. Our fight continues. The Empire still exists, though its strength ebbs. Its tenacity slackens, and its grasp on its worlds weakens. Dying though it is, it can still inflict death. And these, the bodies of our comrades, make that fact abundantly clear. I will not tell you that Lujane, or Carter, or Pergy, or the others would want you to keep fighting, or that your fighting will make their sacrifice worth it. That's trite, and our friends deserve more than trite. They have given up what we fight to preserve. Our duty, and their silent charge to us, is to continue to fight until the Empire can never again strip life from those who want nothing more sinister than freedom for all. He stepped back, then nodded to a technician near the launching bay's external port. At his signal, the repulsor lift platform gently rose and floated toward the vast opening. The ranks of pilots and ground crew parted to let the Briar drift past, then closed up again as the platform entered the magnetic containment field around the external port.
Once outside the ship, the platform dropped away from beneath the caskets, and they hung there, surrounded by stars and a vacuum. The technician used a tractor beam to impel the caskets one by one on a gentle course toward the red dwarf burning at the heart of the star system. Off on a final convoy. As the white shrouds picked up the sun's red highlights, the string of seven caskets took on the appearance of laser bolts, traveling in slow motion, on a looping arc that would stab them into the distant star. Akbar rested a hand on Wedge's shoulder.
It is never easy to let your people go.
No, and it never should be.
Wedge gave the Mon Calamari a firm nod.
If it is, then we've become the enemy, and I'm not going to let that happen.
21. Corrin's first glimpse of Ladette after coming out of hyperspace revealed a blue ball streaked with white and stippled with dark green.
Think we ought to take it and keep it, Whistler. It looks a lot more pleasant than Fog World ever did.
The astromech piped agreement, then brought the tactical screen up on Corrin's monitor.
Corrin glanced at it, then keyed his comm. Three flight is negative for eyeballs.
He raised his left hand and flipped a switch above his head.
S-foil's locked in attack position.
I copy, Nine. Stand by.
Standing by, Control.
Ahead of him, speeding in at the planet, two of Defender Wing's Y-Wing squadrons flew with an escort of four X-Wings each. Because his flight was two ships shy of full, he and Oral were assigned to Warden Squadron. Champion, with General Psalm flying lead, and Guardian squadrons were to go in first and soften things up, so Warden, with its understrength defenses, could sweep through unmolested. From the briefing, Corrin knew the base on Grand Isle would be no match for two squadrons of Y-Wings. In addition to two laser cannons, the Y-Wings sported twin ion cannons and two proton torpedo launchers. Each ship carried eight torpedoes, which meant either of the squadrons packed enough firepower to turn the lush, verdant landscape of Grand Isle into a black, smoking mass of liquid rock.
Rogue Nine, continue to follow two flight, then orbit at angles 10K.
As ordered. Call us if you need anything.
We'll do. Control out.
Corrin thought he caught a hint of his own frustration reflected in Tycho's voice. The orders he had just given Corrin were being relayed to the members of Warden Squadron by Psalm's own controller. The dual command chain was supposed to guarantee good command and control during the operation, but Corrin doubted it would do anything of the sort.
In Corsec, when we were working a joint operation with Imperial Intelligence, the dual control became dual control. And that didn't work well at all.
The ride down through the clear atmosphere got a little bumpy, but having a little resistance to fight with the controls felt good after 6 hours of doing nothing during the hyperspace run. Corrin leveled the X-Wing out at 10 kilometers above the surface of the planet.
Control, three flight on station. Can you send me TAC visual from below?
Here you go, Nine. From Rogue Leader. Returning the favor.
Corrin's cheeks burned as he recalled his sensor data being used by the rest of the squadron on Folor.
Relay my thanks.
The visual feed from Wedge's X-Wing showed four Y-Wings swooping in at the northern face of the volcano's crater. From about a kilometer out, each of the slow craft launched a pair of proton torpedoes, then peeled off. The blue balls streaked out toward the mountainside. They exploded against it at a point where the abundant rains had already eroded and weakened the rock. The rippling series of explosions cast smoke, rock, and burning plants into the air. The visual feed went vector, with green grids representing the land hidden by the smoke. Where there had been a gentle, curved dip in the crater's rim, there now existed a sharp, jagged rift that looked as if some titanic vibro-axe had been used to chop the rock away. As Corrin watched, the gap grew larger,
suddenly realized it was because Wedge was going in.
Tighten it up, Deuce. Wedge's X-Wing plunged through the smoke. Minock, make sure Control is getting a topo scan of this trench.
The smoke cleared almost instantly, showing him a bristle of shattered volcanic rock a dozen meters off each wing.
Wide enough for the bombers, but not much room for error.
He nudged his throttle forward, distancing himself from the Y-Wings following in his ion wash, and emerged from the split rock faster than any prudent pilot would have flown. The laser shots from a quartet of TIE fighters illuminated the air behind him as he came into the crater beneath the shield's protective dome. He immediately inverted and dove toward the base of the crater. Wind whistled from the S-foils. He rolled 180 degrees, filling his cockpit canopy with sky and pulled back on his stick to level the X-Wing out. The astromech behind him shrieked a warning.
I know! I have two eyeballs on my tail!
In the vacuum of space, the presence of two TIEs behind him would have been very serious because their superior maneuverability made them difficult to shake. In atmosphere, however, their less than aerodynamic design and the turbulence produced by their twin engines exhaust meant they had significant yaw problems. This made them no less deadly in a dogfight, but it did open up a myriad of strategies for dealing with them.
Deuce, help here!
On my way!
Brohr's voice crackled through Wedge's helmet.
Three on me. I have them.
Okay. Time for me to gouge at least one of the eyeballs.
Wedge brought the left wing up at 45 degrees, then feathered his throttle back. The lessened thrust and atmospheric drag slowed him enough that his X-Wing slid 50 meters down and 20 to the right. The TIE pilot tried to follow him and remain at his back, but the hexagonal wings killed the side slip. The drag slowed the TIE considerably, and it started to dip toward the jungle carpeting the crater floor. The pilot did the only thing he could to avoid a stall and crash. Diving his ship, he picked up speed and shot ahead of Wedge's X-Wing, but not so far in front to allow Wedge to sideslip left and come in behind.
Not that I wanted to do that anyway.
Wedge punched the left rudder pedal down and slewed the fighter's stern around to the right. Goosing the throttle straightened the ship out. Then Wedge's crosshairs spitted the TIE and burned green. He hit the trigger and the quad lasers converged to blow bits of TIE fighter all over the Grand Isle landscape.
Vaped one.
He saw a smoking TIE slam into a crater wall.
You're clear, leader.
Thanks, Deuce. Report, Three.
Nawara Venn's voice seemed tinged with some disgust.
Four got a pair. Island is blind to my sensors.
Rogue leader to Control. Champion is clear to run.
Relaying that message now. Nine sends thanks for the feed.
Wedge smiled. He would have preferred to have Corrin more involved in the action, but resistance was expected, and until they could bring a new pilot in for Lujane Forge, his flight would be vulnerable, in spite of the skills both Corrin and Oral exhibited. General Somm had suggested leaving Three Flight to oversee Warden Squadron, Defender Wing's least experienced squadron. They'd all get mission experience, but nothing too life-threatening.
Control to Rogue Leader. Champion and Guardian squadrons beginning their runs.
I can see them, Control.
Through the gap lumbered the Y-Wings. Never an elegant craft. They appeared to have the atmospheric flight characteristics of something between a TIE starfighter and a big rock. All of the Y-Wings dove to pick up speed, but they leveled out with little apparent trouble and started in on their strafing and torpedo runs.
They may be slow and awkward, but Psalm's pilots do know how to do their jobs.
Control to Rogue Leader. We have trouble.
Go ahead, Control.
Two ships, Kerrick-class cruiser and a Lancer-class frigate, are in our exit vector. Iridane is beginning a withdrawal.
Wedge felt his stomach begin to fold in on itself. Control, confirm Lancer-class frigates. They're rare. Maybe this is a mistake. Please.
Just let it be a mistake.
Confirm, Lancer-class frigate. Orders?
Lancer-class frigates have been the Imperial Navy's solution to the problem of snub fighters and the threat they pose to capital ships. All of 250 meters long, the boxy ships were studded with 20 gunnery towers, each one sporting a Sinar Fleet System quad laser array. With its speed, which was exceptional for a big ship, and those weapons, the Lancer-class ships were rancors amid a nerf herd. While the Iridane's turbolasers could have driven it off, the Carrick-class cruiser outgunned the blockade runner, leaving the Lancer free to pounce on the fighters. The X-Wings were fast enough to elude the Lancer, but there was no way the Y-Wings could outrun it or fight it. The Lancer's guns made it the equivalent of 80 TIEs. Wench glanced at his fuel monitor. He didn't have enough fuel remaining for a long fight with the Lancer and the run home. I don't have enough fuel to let the Iridane run for help. The best chance the Y-Wings had was for the X-Wings to engage the Lancer while they ran. Before he could reply to Tycho's request for orders, General Salm's voice came over the comm.
Rogue Leader, screen Warden and Guardian squadrons and get them out of there! Champion will buy you the time!
Negative, General. Champion will die that way. Rogue may die if we hit the Lancer and you break out.
I'm making this in order, Antilles!
Rogue Squadron takes its orders from Admiral Akbar, General.
Rogue Leader, this is Nine.
Not now, Nine.
Commander, I know how we can get the Lancer. Worst case, we lose one ship. What is he babbling about?
Easy, General. Go ahead, Nine.
Ships have to close to 2.5 clicks to get a firing solution for a proton torpedo. The Y-Wing getting that close to the Lancer will be vaped. An X-Wing can get in and send targeting data to the Y-Wings, increasing the range for their solution. Same thing Captain Selchu did in the Forbidden at Chorax. The proton torps will home for 30 seconds, which means they can hit a target at just over 14.5 clicks. That will keep them safe from the Lancer.
Wedge frowned as he worked through Corrin's plan. A weaving X-Wing might be able to get in close to the Lancer.
General Salm saw the flaw in the plan at the same time Wedge did.
A weaving X-Wing won't be able to get a targeting lock on the Lancer, Antilles! This is nonsense!